all the unique characters.
I do let them bang. Yeah, I'm a legend, man. I'm building my legs.
All the stories and perspectives featured weekly.
I wasn't fully committed to that choke, and I kind of sunk into it, started squeezing tighter, and I kind of heard him gurgle a little bit. I was like, oh.
And all the combat sports you could ask for in the best state in the U.S.
Like I said, Ohio versus the world. It's going to happen for sure. Watch out.
It'll be cool, man. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to show them why the Ohio MMA scene is, in my opinion, one of the best MMA scenes in the country.
This is Forged in
OHIO.
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 Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 74 of Forged in Ohio. My name is Jake Murrin, and I'm the host of the podcast. It's been 3 months since I was last joined by a fighter for the second time, and 5 months since I was joined by the same fighter for the third time on the show. That all changes today with one of the most dangerous fighters in the state of Ohio. The last time he joined me, he was 2-0 in his pro career. Now he's 4-0 with a 100% finish rate. It's Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira. Thanks for coming on the show, Josh, and welcome back to Forged in Ohio.
Of course. Thank you, Jake. Always an honor being on your show. Always.
Likewise. It's an honor for you to join me here on Forged in Ohio, and there's no better way to start than your last fight at LFA 180 when you scored a second round knockout win over Jesse Martinelli. How are you feeling going into what was your fourth pro fight?
You know, emotions were all over the place. I had taken some time off. My third fight with Luke Chokan, I ended with a victory, but I had needed surgery on my hand. I went to catch a teep kick, and the kick came at a weird angle and just ripped my thumb out of place, tendon off the bone, just a lot of stuff. So even though I was injured, even though I had surgery, I was still training in the gym. But, you know, emotions were high going into this one, but the training was great, camp was great, but, you know, as soon as that cage door was locked behind me, I already knew I had it.
I know hand injuries are super common in mixed martial arts, but is there any hesitancy, maybe not in the fight itself, but maybe in training leading up to the fight when you're fully back healthy, of throwing that hand and making sure you don't injure it again or anything like that?
Yeah, I was just keeping the entire time, even with my hand in the cast, I was just keeping it right here, glued to my head and working on the jab the whole time, you know. But as soon as the doctor said I was good to go and start throwing it again, it was like throwing it for the first time, you know, just trying to figure out, proper ways to throw it. I kept catching the thumb, and there was still a lot of pain, still breaking up the scar tissue in there too. So, you know, just kept doing my thing. And yeah, by the time the fight came around, by the time I was at the venue, hitting pads backstage in those LFA 4-ounce gloves, I was just like, yep, I'm ready to go. Here we go.
Coming in, your opponent had 3 finishes on his record, but had been beaten before. You were the first to beat him inside the distance. Did you come up with a detailed game plan that maybe feeded that confidence going in to get that win? Aaron, did you foresee yourself winning the fight exactly the way you did?
I saw myself winning the fight with the wheel kick in the first round, but you always have a game plan going into a fight, and sometimes that game plan goes out the window, but I stuck to it as best as I could, you know, just cutting angles, shifting stances, not giving him a static target to shoot on, you know, constantly moving my feet, making him second guess. He was very, very good in the clinch, the wrestling clinch, getting me up against the fence, trying to get me down. But, you know, we drill those positions hundreds, thousands of times. So I knew if I could keep it on the feet, it was going to be a short night, you know.
When it comes to making those in-fight adjustments, and those are so important in this sport, how good are you at doing that? It clearly shows in your record and the performances that you've been able to show so far in your pro career.
You know, you just see certain things, you know. You read up your, or you look into tape on your opponent. You see the things that he throws, why he throws it, certain strikes that he throws on the back foot or going forward, what would make him shoot. You know, so once you start seeing those tells once you start seeing the small things that he does. When he was in southpaw, he always takes a slight step to the right to try and get the lead foot control. So once he started doing that, he also drops his hands at the same time, which opened up for the wheel kick and some of the spinning attacks. But yeah, once you start seeing those tells, or especially when I start seeing those tells, like, okay, cool. Once I start hitting him a little bit more, once I start, once he starts exposing his what he's vulnerable at, it's usually a wrap from there.
You mentioned the first round wheel kick, or at least thinking that's how the fight would go. Why that specific strike? Why that specific method of victory?
Like I said, when he switches to southpaw, he always drops his hands, you know? I had already opened up the fight early into the first round with a spinning kick to the body, and I saw how frantic he was trying to block the body, and then I started fainting a little bit more. So once you start seeing those tells, and especially when you step back into southpaw, his hands came down just a little bit, and that was, I thought I had it, but, you know, I hit him on the closer to the top of the head, but, you know, still wobbled him, and still did my thing.
Usually I don't ask fighters to walk through the finishes of their fights, but I love the way you describe these finishing sequences in your fights and just all the technique that goes into it. So can you walk me through those final moments at LFA 180?
Yeah. Second round starts. I heard something, his corner tell him that he was tired, that I was tired, so he was like on the balls of his feet, hopping up, hyping himself up, and I was just standing there, hands on my hips, like, okay. And, you know, he came out a little heavy. Second round, I just started flowing, switch kicks, kind of getting right out of angle, making a miss by an inch, which is basically making somebody miss by a mile, or the same as making somebody miss by a mile. But that finishing sequence, I was in southpaw. I had just broken off with him in the clinch, pushed him off, and I stepped into southpaw, double jab to an inside low kick, and I swivel back to orthodox. He throws a jab that pops me, and I see the right hand coming right down the middle, which could have put my lights out, you know? So I pull right out of range. I cross body and lead hook, and he stepped right into it when he came down to block against that body shot. I saw he was wobbled a little bit, and he changed levels, so I thought he went for a takedown, so I shifted the southpaw to catch an angle. Once I noticed that he was a little wobbled, I switched my feet back to orthodox, and I threw that knee right up the middle, which caught him. He went down, and I started going for ground and pound, you know? And Rob Mooney, I've had him ref for me before for B2 title fights, you know? And I remember the same thing for that amateur title fight. I looked up at him, I was like, dude, this guy's done. Stop the fight. But, you know, Jesse's tough. He's one of the toughest guys I've ever faced, you know? And once I felt him building back up to his base, I just kind of got like a half Nelson and just put all of my weight on him. So if he was to get back to his feet, I'd just make him more tired with all of that weight on him. He then got back up, short elbow, knee on the way up, and I pushed him off, and he started covering up. I was in orthodox, switched to southpaw, did a stutter step, and he brought his hands up, and I saw the perfect opportunity for that left hook to the body, which was the checkmate, the game ender. And, you know, it's all of the small moving parts, you know. I heard my coach Shane say head kick on the exit, but with his hands up, it wouldn't have been the best. So, you know, you have to, those small little things. I would have loved to throw a wheel kick or a head kick off that. But, you know, it's the fractions of a second where you have to decide what can I throw, what's open, what's available to me. But, man, it would have been cool to throw a wheel kick from there or something. But, you know, it was just a clean shot. Rob Mooney pulled me off of him, and that was it, you know. Couldn't have played a more perfect outcome to the fight, you know.
Man, every single time I talk to you, I get impressed by just how present you are in these fights and your state of mind and how easily able you are to recall every single moment. It's just so impressive. Were you surprised by how tough your opponent was and how much damage he was able to take before eventually getting finished and that ref that you were talking about called the fight?
Absolutely. At the end of the first, he had a big slice underneath his eye, a couple of notches on his head. And at the end of the first, I was like, you know, still kind of like showing that I wasn't tired, still showing that I was fine, I was ready. But when he walked out, I was like, geez, he's so dang tough. So, you know, he's got some great coaches, and I talked to him afterwards. Just a super tough human being, you know, years and years and years of wrestling, much more experience than I've ever had for wrestling, even fighting as well. But to put somebody out or somebody away with all of that experience, and he's never been finished before either. He was coming off of a loss, or he had a loss for his last fight. But, yeah, just a super tough human being, bro. Just super tough. And he even messaged me like, hey, let's get some training and stuff too. So love to get some work in with him.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Between rounds going into round number two, did you sense that a finish would be near?
Just the way that he walked back to the, walked back to his corner. And I was like, dang, he's tough. Matt and Shane come running. I was like, dude, you look great. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, I still got tagged up. But sat down, and they were just saying, start mixing it up to the body, you know, not just headhunting, because he's tough up here. So right cross the body, open up the hook to the head. And I knew I was going to go for the finish. I didn't know if it was going to be the second or the third, but once I see that opportunity present itself, I'm all in, and I'm going for the finish.
When you hear his corner tell Martinelli that you're tired, what's your reaction to that in the fight?
I'll show you how tired I am, basically, you know. I remember he was standing up the whole time. He was hopping right in front of me. The ref didn't say go just yet, but he was already in my face as if to expect that I was tired. But I just saw that, and I was like, oh, he wants to try and finish this now, you know. I was like, okay, let's go. But it gave me a little bit more fuel, I guess, you know. So it's like, oh, he thinks I'm tired? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is that the type of corner advice, I guess, in hindsight? On one hand, it's questionable because you clearly weren't tired. But on the other hand, maybe that was the motivation that he needed in that moment to get going, knowing he had taken some damage and maybe he was tiring there in that second round.
Yeah, I only heard the he's tired part, but you know, great corner advice. You know, what else can you do? You lost the first round, and you have to make a comeback. You know, what else can you do? You know, the takedowns weren't working, the striking wasn't working. He's tired. Go for the finish. You know, so what else can you say to somebody in that position?
I know at LFA 160, you said the canvas was pretty slippery on that one. Was the LFA cage as slippery this time around for LFA 180?
Oh, no, it felt so much better, you know? I don't know if it was like a canvas or something. Maybe it was just an off night for me, you know? Like I told you, I only had 45 seconds to get ready, so maybe it was just a little bit to do with nerves or I don't know. But yeah, canvas felt nice inside of that octagon. Yeah, felt good.
Yeah, I believe it was Jade Sheely that last time she got a finish and pushed your fight forward, and then you were able to rush. So no Jade Sheely finish this time around for LFA 180, but she's killing it herself, doing some amazing things.
Oh, she's killing it, man. Yeah, she actually helped me. She brought up another teammate and got some good rounds with me before a couple weeks before the fight. So always great working with her and her team.
Good stuff, man. You've been pretty critical of yourself in the past, giving yourself a 6 out of 10 rating on your win at LFA 160 when we talked last. What do you think of your performance at LFA 180?
You know, I'd say 8, you know. There's some things that I saw, and as soon as that fight posted onto a fight pass, you know, I was just watching myself, watching over and over and over again, and trying to put the pieces together that I remembered from the fight as well. So, you know, I there were some things that I wasn't the most proud of myself, but I'm still extremely proud of my performance. So, you know, I hope to have a 10 out of 10 one day, but, you know, I'm still too critical on myself. Not too critical on myself. I'm critical on myself because I know I can do so much more, and I was already right back into the gym on Monday following that fight, already already working on improving the things that I wasn't a fan of.
How many times do you think have you watched that fight?
Maybe 100 times, who knows? I don't know.
up to 100 maybe. Times?
Maybe, you know. Sometimes I rewind just enough to see a certain sequence, or rewind just enough to see, you know, my feints or my positioning in certain positions on the fence or something, you know. I'll chop up that footage and I'll see it, watch it. All these little parts that I can take out of it, the ones that stuck out to me the most, you know. But, yeah, you know, maybe a couple hundred times, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, you hear that there are levels to this game, and I don't hear many other fighters doing that, or at least watching their fight 100 times, watching those specific sequences to get better. Do you think that's something that distinguishes you from the rest of the pack in mixed martial arts?
I feel like everybody should be doing this, you know? I don't want to put myself above anybody else, you know? But even if you do come off of a win, wouldn't you want to watch yourself to make sure that you can make your next performance even better, you know? Sharpen, you know, your sword's already sharp, you know? Why not sharpen it even more, you know? I feel like a lot of people are doing that, but, you know, I'm even just watching my clips. I go back to the gym, or I find a place at home, or since the weather's nice, I go outside and I just, like, shadow box it as much as I can until I'm exhausted. So, you know, I don't feel like I'm the only one doing it, but I do it until I can't.
You've said before that you don't force finishes, you find them. Well, through four fights, you've found four finishes. What's been the key so far for you to maintain that 100% finish rate?
My consistency, you know, it's not about motivation anymore. It's just, I can't live without it. I go to the gym, no matter how tired I am, no matter how hurt I am, even if it is just to watch the grappling or striking classes, even if it is just to be present in the gym, just to hit the bag, just to go on the bike, you know, moving around with my coach Shane, Matt, Professor Cam, you know, picking their brains, you know, just doing as much as I can, and even that's not enough.
On social media after the win, you said winning in Louisville felt surreal, channeling the inner spirits of legends like Muhammad Ali in the heart of his hometown. Just how much did that mean to you?
It meant a lot, you know, as a kid, you know, watching highlights of the greats, you know, the people that are immortal, not, of course, in life, but have edged themselves into the history books, you know. After weigh-ins and after the press conference, like the questions that they'd ask Michael Chiesa and the other announcer, asking questions about what you think about the fight and stuff, I immediately went to Muhammad Ali's grave. You know, I actually went to the wrong cemetery, the one next door, and I asked somebody else. I was like, hey, do you know where Muhammad Ali is? He's like, oh, he's actually in that cemetery over there. So I was like, oh, shoot. So I started sprinting over, and they were about to close the gates, and this the security guard at that specific cemetery said, oh, we only have 7 minutes before we close up. And I was like, please, I need to see Ali. I need to leave him something, you know. And he did one of these, and I was like, okay. Almost got lost in the cemetery. I found the green marker on the ground, and I just followed it up to his burial site. You know, there were stairs, his beautiful flowers, and just everything. You know, I kissed my hand, kissed his grave. I said a little prayer. I just talked my heart and soul out. You know, thanked him for everything. You know, asked him how you did it. You know, how do you deal with all this kind of stuff? You know, it felt calm. I felt at ease, and then I left my little memento, and I started walking back out, and I got lost again. And thankfully, one of the other security guards came to pick me up and took me back to the front gate. And it was, I don't know, I just felt at ease. I felt ready, you know. I was just taken back, you know. I'm fighting in his hometown. I have to put on a show for everybody, you know. I know I always put on a show and I put on, you know, good performances, but this one meant the most to me thus far. And I went out there, I floated like a butterfly, stung like a bee, I was in his face, I was gone, slipping punches, rolling, getting out of the way, and I just, you know, icing on top of the cake would be me in the center doing a shuffle, you know, but that's him, and can't take too much away from him. I have to be my own person. I just got up on the fence and I just looked out into the crowd and I was like, I belong here. I belong here. Yeah. It's incredibly important to me to not just honor the past and the greats of the past, but to set myself up for greatness myself.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. It sounds like it was quite the spiritual experience for you. For that reason, was Louisville always a place that you wanted to compete that way? You could have that experience, not only in the cage fighting in his hometown, but the experience you had of visiting his grave as well.
Yeah, just everything fell into place. Everything just, you know, even if it wasn't in Louisville, I probably, if it was anywhere else in Kentucky, I still would have went back to his grave and still did everything, you know, no matter how far away it was. But, you know, it just, the stars aligned. Everything was laid out perfectly.
Like, are there any other places on your list that you have bookmarked for places that you want to compete at one day? I can imagine that list is pretty long with how talented you are and the aspirations that you have in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, you know, fighting in Philly, going to the Rocky statue, you know, climbing up those steps, you know, so many places, you know, San Francisco, going and visiting Bruce Lee's grave, you know, watching. If there is a state or a country, I will find whoever the greatest was from there, and I will pay my respects, and I will put on a show.
Yeah, a true,
no matter where it is.
A true student of the game, man. Talking to Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira on Forge in Ohio. I want to talk about some of your teammates and your gym, Immortal Martial Arts Center. I feel like it's always special to have Mark Coleman in your corner, but at LFA 180, after what happened just over a month ago, what did that mean to you?
Not the world, you know. Me and Matt had just gotten done training, and I pull up Instagram and I see Coleman laying in bed with the tube down his throat, you know. And right before that, we were wondering, where was he? Where was he even? It's a lot more quiet than usual, you know. So Matt calls Wes Sims. Wes Sims lets us know what happens, and we're just in shock, you know. But we were still saying in the back of our head, if there's anybody that can get through this, it's Coleman. So we were planning on visiting him, but it was only immediate family, of course. But sending prayer, just praying to the big man upstairs, please don't take my coach, please don't take my friend away, you know. And you know, a little later that week, he's up, he's talking, his daughters are there, and you know, and he was back in on Monday the next week, you know. He had a little raspy voice, but he was still there, he was still watching, he was still encouraging us, you know. And a little bit before me and my fiance Tiffany are driving down, Coleman sends me a message, hey, send me the location. I'm like, okay, cool. No way he's coming down. No way he's coming down. And he made it. He made it. And seeing him in the locker room before I made my walk out just filled me with emotion. And I was like, no way I'm going to lose. No way I'm going to lose. With this team, Matt Brown, Mark Coleman, Shane, Cam, the people that came to watch me, my family from Hawaii, even the people that don't even know who I am, you know, I knew for a fact I was going to win.
Yeah, I know Mark said he feels uncomfortable being called a hero, even though he is. And I can imagine that you guys all came together and rallied behind the hammer. All of Ohio MMA, all MMA in general, really rallied behind
MMA
the hammer.
General,
it was an incredible thing to see. And one of my favorite social media posts all year was his first day back at Immortal following the incident. And I believe you were there with him on day one. What was that like seeing
him back?
Who
you think took the picture? Nah, but it was crazy, you know? Standing ovation to him walking through the door, you know? He's his story outside of fighting, outside of everything, you know, he's had some tough times, and just seeing him back into the gym a week later or a week and a half or however long it was, no matter what you're going through in life, just gotta charge through it, you know. And he's living proof of it, and I'm just glad to be in the presence of a hero and of a legend like that, you know? And, you know, we just feed off of that energy. We all just feed off of that energy.
Well said, man. Is it safe to say that a guy like Mark Coleman inspires you with what he's been able to do and overcome?
Oh, absolutely. I remember watching him on, like, the Spike TV, like, highlights of, like, MMA and, like, Pride and stuff like that, and meeting him the second week I was here. You know, he had this big beard, almost unrecognizable. Matt's like, you know who this is? He's like, oh. I was like, oh, I think I've seen him before. He's like, this is the Hammer. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Mark Coleman? And I started running around. And he came in and gave me a hug, you know, just all the stories of him help, like, you know, him helping me cut weight in the middle of a snowstorm before I drive up to Kentucky to fight Jalen McIntyre. Him helping me cut weight so many times, you know. Just, you know, he's got so many things going on. He'll stop everything that he's doing just to help somebody out, you know, myself, other people around the gym, you know. And that's just legendary. It's something you can't replicate, you know. Just getting chills thinking about it, you know.
me too, man. It's an incredible story and what he's done for all of mixed martial arts, especially here in Ohio, and overcoming and inspiring us all. It's pretty incredible. Now for one of your close friends, Lucas Siebert, what was it like seeing him go out there and win his pro debut at 247 FC Brawl in the Berg, I think 2 months ago?
Bro, me and my fiance Tiffany, we were almost tearing up watching him land that flying knee. It went from, oh my God, he's doing it, to, hey ref, you should have stopped that a while ago, man. But we were just, you know, ever since we were younger, you know, we've always been pushing each other and just seeing our dreams come true. It's just been fantastic. And he's about to have this big announcement coming up very soon for his next fight as well. And I will be at the next one. And I know I can't make it to all of them, but he is, you know, we feed off of each other's energy. And it's just we're repping each other till the end, you know. He's introduced me to a level of wrestling when I first started that I was nowhere like near to, you know. And just when we blink back up, we go back to training and see how much we've grown, you know. It's awesome, man. It's awesome. Love the dude. Great guy. Even meeting Cam Jenkins through him, another great teammate of mine as well. Just great stuff, man. Just living the high, man. Living off the high from everything, man.
For sure, man. So Lucas Siebert, you know, that announcement's coming soon after he signed that exclusive multi-fight deal with 247. Oh, yeah. I know it's more of a question to ask Lucas himself, but what did that mean to him? Or I guess, how happy were you for him when he signed that deal?
Bro, he took 247 by storm. He's been killing it every single step of the way, and you're saying that he has a multi-fight deal with that organization. What else can I say? You know, it's just fantastic, and I'm happy to see him living it. You know, I'm happy to see him with that deal, and with the fight announcement that he's coming up. I know who it is. I'm not saying anything just yet, but he is going to be selling out stadiums. He's going to be selling out arenas, and he is going to be he's whoever he is standing across the cage from. It's going to be a spectacle, and it is going to be a must see.
I think you're the perfect person to ask this question to, because I interview fighters representing Ohio. It's called Forge in Ohio. That's the show. You're from Hawaii, but you represent Ohio, so you're allowed on the show anytime you want. Lucas Siebert, I feel like he has, you know, three states of support: Ohio, West Virginia, and of course Pennsylvania. But now on Tapology, it says he's fighting out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Am I allowed to have him on again in the future? What should I do about that?
Bro, of course, you know, of course you should. He always cross trains with everybody down here anyway. So, absolutely you should bring him back on. Absolutely. Like I always say, you can take the boy out of the island, but you can't take the island out of the boy. So, you know, he still reps Ohio through and through. But he's the king of Pittsburgh.
There you go, man. That's a good way of putting it. And if Lucas is listening right now, which I'm sure he will be, you're welcome back on Forge in Ohio anytime, man. Another great moment for you and the team, and you mentioned his name. You cornered Cam Jenkins for his amateur debut. How cool is that for you and the team, knowing the injury that delayed his debut and how quickly the finish came for him in that fight?
Bro, you saw 3 years of training nonstop through an injury manifest itself in the span of 61 seconds. Made men. It was a weird walkout. We were upstairs still warming up, and nobody had told us that his song was playing, and the walkout was already happening until like 2 minutes later. So we had barely gotten done. We had just gotten done with pad work. We were doing some clinch, and all of a sudden, the guy comes up, "Hey, why aren't you guys downstairs?" It's just like, bro, why don't you guys have walkie-talkies trying to tell us, like, communicate with everybody upstairs and downstairs? They got the slowest elevator in the world there. The door was opening up super slow. We thought we got stuck in it for a second, but by the time we had walked out, the song was playing so much that they already had restarted it. So we walked in, got the Vaseline on him, and, you know, walked over to the side of the cage, and he is just locked in. He's ready to go. And we're waiting for his opponent to walk out now. About like 2 minutes later, his opponent finally walks out. And yeah, then they start. And what's funny is that Lucas's last opponent was cornering Cam's opponent, if that makes sense. He was cornering Cam's opponent. So, yeah, it was a little bit of rivalry going back and forth, if anything, but it was just great experience, you know. Cam got popped with a jab and then just double jabbed in, right hand over the top, and a gigantic slam onto the guy's neck. And, yeah, it's just how it was picture perfect for an amateur debut, you know. And even now, we've tried to match him up for a couple other people, OCL, Made Man, 247, no names back. So, you know, it just goes to show you the team that he's training with, the people that he's training with have invested a lot of time into him, and he'll be ready for whatever opponent stands in front of him. You know, he's just a killer. He's always looking to improve. He's always looking to dominate every position of the fight, you know. So be on the lookout for Killer Cam Jenkins.
Yeah, as a 1-0 amateur, you know, it can be kind of hard to tell how far a 1-0 amateur fighter can take his game and improve in mixed martial arts. I've talked to Cam before. You've talked to him many, many times before. What is his ceiling in mixed martial arts? And it seems like he's having a hard time finding a fight just for number two in his amateur career.
That ceiling is high for that dude, man. And for everybody in the gym, you know, for everybody that we train with. It's how much time you want to invest, and he's investing so much time into it. It's if he's not at work, he's here, you know. If he's not here, he's lifting weights to strengthen his knee, you know. So he's always looking to improve. If he's not doing those things, he's watching footage, you know. So always looking to improve. He's gonna go very, very far.
Now, he's not your teammate, but I also have to ask about someone we've talked about before on this show. Max Blessed Holloway, I know you represent and support Hawaiian MMA very well and are a big fan of his. What was your reaction to what he did at UFC 300?
What everybody else's reaction was, screaming at the top of your lungs, running around in circles like a crazy person. Oh my gosh, winning 5 rounds and then standing in front of one of the most dangerous punchers in the lightweight division. Risking it all, and not even risking it all at that point, just standing and banging, and that thunderous right hand 2 seconds before the buzzer rings. I knew they were already popping off fireworks back home for him, so shoot. it was incredible. That's the kind of stuff that is going to make him be remembered forever, you know? Top knockouts, top performances ever, you know? He's already had so many great fights, beating Jose Aldo, beating Brian Ortega, the Matrix stuff against Calvin Cater, you know? Like, this is just adding to that resume, adding to that portfolio of all the greatness he's done, you know? And even knowing Alan Liu, that used to train, he still trains with Stout, of course, but he lives in Hawaii now, and he's one of Max's main training partners. So, you know, always hearing from him, too. So it's just mind-boggling, crazy stuff, man. And... yeah, just crazy stuff, man.
Yeah, it's still wild knowing that he was up 4-0. Didn't even have to do that, and yet did, knowing that it was UFC 300 for the BMF title. All the stakes, the stage, everything. It was absolutely incredible. True or false, it was one of the best moments in UFC history, maybe ever.
Absolutely, you know, that's what the real BMF is, you know? Not just bad mother effer, you know, blessed man forever. You can't recreate that kind of stuff, you know. It's you just can't recreate that. You can't bottle that up. You can't sell that. He is the baddest MRFer around, you know. He's forever.
Once again, joined by Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira on Forged in Ohio. Back to you for a little bit before I get you out of here. Last time you joined the show, you talked about just wanting to have fun out there while you compete. Is that still the goal moving forward? And what are you trying to do moving forward in terms of growing your game and improving on your skills?
Not just having fun anymore, you know. At certain levels, you know, you can't just throw all the techniques out. You have to be surgical. You have to be precise. You have to be present, you know. You have to be able to be there and make these small calculations in a fraction of a second, you know. And, you know, just becoming the best martial artist that I can be. Not dwelling too much on my past performances, but also working on myself so I can have even better ones into the future, you know? Just being a better martial artist than I was my last fight, or the fight before that, or even the fight before that, you know? Slowly growing.
Have you noticed that improvement through 4 fights in your pro career, that each one you're becoming more calculated and dialed in the moment, more present, and having fun, I guess, too, while you're at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to control those emotions while you're scared to death backstage, you know, getting those butterflies in your stomach and having them, you know, fly in formation, you know, tricking yourself, not tricking yourself, you know, like the same chemical reaction that you have in your head for fears or being nervous is the same chemical reaction that you have for being excited, so, you know, being able to turn that switch, you know, the mental aspect of it, the physical aspect, you know, just improving all of those.
I know you like to stay active. Your last fight was your first in 2024. Have you thought about when you'd like to return?
We're looking at August right now, a pretty big event. I'm not going to say anything too much just yet, but it'll be a big one.
All right, well, that's exciting stuff. Being active, you know, can come at the expense of your physical health. You talked about the hand surgery that you went after the Luke Shokan fight. How are you doing physically right now? Are there any lingering injuries that you might need to heal?
No, I'm pretty much all healed up, you know, dealing with some other injuries from training that I'm still working on to improve, but my shins were a little bruised up. My heel was a little bit bruised up. So I was like, I'll go on a Monday and work on my boxing a little bit more, you know? But yeah, all healed up from the fight. Still a little injured from training, but still as active as I can be.
All right, well, it sounds like fans can see you back in there sometime in August. I have a guess, but I don't want to say it here yet, and I'd be happy to have you on the show, whether it's before that fight, after the announcement, or after that fight as well. It's always an honor to have you on the show, man.
Of course, always an honor to be here as well.
Well, before we wrap up, just anything you want to shout out in terms of social media handles or sponsorships, I want to give you the floor here.
Yeah, of course. I'd like to shout out Cisco. Go follow him at Dope Soul Tattoo. One of the slickest, sharpest tattoo artists you've ever seen. Aloha Beef Chips, Immortal Coffee, Immortal Diet Optimization. My friend Eddie, Also with Immortal Coffee, my friend Connor. So, you know, Immortal Meals, my manager Rick Voorhees, all of my coaches, Matt Brown, Mark Coleman, Shane Nietzsche, Cameron Knight, Jimmy Lobo, Harrison, Corey. I want to thank my family and friends in Hawaii, Ohio, everywhere else in the world. Shout out to my fiance, Tiffany, and thank you. Thank you for having me on again.
Of course, man. Anytime. You mentioned the tattoo sponsor, by the way. I saw in your Instagram story a few days ago, you're getting a new dragon piece on the chest. That looked sick, man.
Yeah. We're just, you know, sketching it out, getting the final design all together. He's off to a competition right now. And then when he comes back, we're going to lock in, man. I'm so excited. Just some of the stuff that he does is just so sharp. It just like pops, you know? So I'm very excited to have this piece.
I'm excited to see it. Thanks again, Josh, for coming back on the show. It's a privilege to talk to you, who I think is one of Ohio's best, especially since this is the third time you joined me on the show. You already know how I like to end these chats. It's with the O-H-I-E-O chant. So, O-H...
I-O.
Thanks, Josh. Congrats on your last win at LFA 180. I can't wait to see what you do next in August, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, my brother. Always an honor. Always a privilege. Talk to you soon, okay?
That was Josh, the Flying Hawaiian Pereira, the 4-0 pro mixed martial artist with a 100% finish rate. If you're not on the Flying Hawaiian's bandwagon already, then I don't know what you're doing. He's easily one of the best fighters in Ohio right now. It seems like he hasn't faced a truly tough test yet in the octagon, and I'm going to be eyeing his social media until he announces his next fight, knowing that it's guaranteed to be a big one. That will do it for episode 74 of Forged in Ohio. Don't forget that you can find the show on Instagram and Facebook at Forged in Ohio for announcements, show highlights, and a whole lot more. And if you want to take your support to the next level, then download episodes on the audio side wherever you're listening, or if you're watching on YouTube, leave the video a like and subscribe to the channel. All these things cost you absolutely nothing. Thanks again for watching or tuning in. I've been your host, Jake Murren, and this was Forged in Ohio.